This is CRNH on KXL. I am Chris Ryan. Appreciate you joining us for the show this hour. The program brought to you by New England College as well as Fox Ace Hardware. And this segment of the show that is brought to you by Rath Young and Pignatelli, a national impact that is unique in New Hampshire. For information, check out rathlaw.com. Rath Young and Pignatelli, proud sponsors of political interviews here on the program. Earlier on New Hampshire Today, I talked with New Hampshire Governor Chris Sununu.
Good morning. I'm Chris Ryan, and Justin McIsaac, joining you for New Hampshire Today across the great states of New Hampshire. Appreciate you joining us for the show. It's an historic day in New Hampshire for a couple of reasons. First off, the vaccine could be in the ground of the state as early as today. We'll get some more information on that in just a moment. Also, the Electoral College confirms the results of the 2020 election with New Hampshire's four electors expected to vote for Joe Biden today. As we're joined on the show right now by the governor, the great state of New Hampshire, Chris Sununu. Governor Sununu, how are you?
Good morning. How you doing, Chris? Good to hear you.
Good to talk to you as well. Appreciate you joining us for the show. Let's start off with the vaccine. And what can you tell us about, you know, the details regarding that, when it's going to arrive in the state of New Hampshire, and what you're expecting in terms of individuals being able to access it when it is here?
Sure. So it's obviously, to your point, it is a historic day. We've been kind of waiting for this for literally 9-10 months now. But the vaccine's here. And if you told me 4 or 5 months ago that we were going to have a vaccine before Christmas, I would have said, you're crazy. Can't be done. But they did it. They worked hard. They didn't skip steps. They moved very quickly. And it is arriving this morning. So we'll have about 12,000 doses arriving this morning. Those will be parsed out to a combination of hospitals for their most high need individuals, those individuals at the highest risk, mostly a lot of the long-term care workers that are interacting with a lot of their patients and that we need that workforce there. About 40-50% will also go to the long-term care facilities. That happens through Walgreens and CVS. They really have a federal contract to manage that. So we basically parse out the vaccine. We give them our share, and then they have direct contracts with all the long-term care facilities on their needs. And so that process will start this week as well. So, it's great. And then this is just the Pfizer vaccine. It requires a deep freeze. So it will arrive this morning. It will come to our deep freeze location where it'll stay kind of on ice, if you will, in a frozen form until we basically thaw it out and start parsing it out across the state. We're at the point where not much will be held in storage, obviously, because, you know, there's such a high need right now. So we'll start that thawing process, parsing it out, and being very meticulous and very specific about who gets how much. Everyone's in a system. Everyone's identified with us how much they need, and everyone kind of gets their share of that need between the hospitals and the long-term care facilities. And then next week, the Moderna vaccine will start coming in on a weekly basis with the Pfizer vaccine. So we'll really be able to start, I think, picking up the amount of vaccine that we submit across the state. I think the last numbers I saw across, these are national numbers, about 20 million people will receive the vaccine in December, 30 million in January, and 50 million in February. So you're looking at 100 million, just shy of a third, maybe 25% of the country will have access of the highest need individuals will have access to the vaccine in the next 75 days, which is pretty amazing, really pretty amazing.
So to that, and the numbers from Alex Azar, who was on Face the Nation yesterday, actually 20 million by the end of December, 50 million by the end of January, and 100 million by the end of February. Are those percentage-wise on par with what you'd expect in New Hampshire? Is going to be an even distribution across the country? So do you...
Yes.
Okay, so, and...
Absolutely. We get our pro rata share based on population.
Okay.
So every state gets the same proportion. It isn't affected by who has more COVID or not. It's just everyone gets their pro rata share.
And each individual will receive the initial shot, then 3 weeks after they have to get a second shot with both the Pfizer and Moderna. There's a third vaccine, which would only be one shot, from what I understand, that is still up for approval. So we shall see what happens in regards to that. I want to talk a little bit about the passing of Speaker Hinch, because not only is it a tremendous tragedy, but the aftermath to me has been really eye-opening on a number of levels. And, you know, to see individuals who are elected officials, you know, continuing to deny that COVID-19 is a serious problem, continuing to discuss mask wearing in a sense that they don't need to do it, and to even to allude to the fact that there's some sort of a vast conspiracy, of which I may be a part, you were supposed to be a part, that we're trying to pass along misinformation in regards to an individual's death is absolutely disgraceful. And I just implore individuals to wake up and to be a part of the solution instead of a part of the problem. And it has been really hard to see and receive messages like I have, and I'm sure you have, about what is the death of an individual who is beloved by individuals like you and Jeb Bradley and many others, and that we're somehow trying to push misinformation about it is horrific.
You nailed it right there. I mean, I don't know how to even add on to that, but you're absolutely right. Every time it seems like we're at a point in this country where when something disproves our theories, when something goes against what we believe to be true, everyone wants to claim a conspiracy theory. Everyone wants to dig and manipulate data to show that they were right, and it's really bizarre behavior because we're not talking about something trivial. We're talking about not just Speaker Hinch, who is unfortunately no longer with us. Just as you said, just an incredible guy. Always happy, right? Always jovial, always happy, and could really bridge the gap, and almost trivializing that, individuals trivializing that as to, it wasn't COVID and it, this whole conspiracy theory stuff. It's just, it's beyond disgraceful. It's bizarre. It's really twisted, bizarre type behavior. And so what we need to do is keep pushing the message, right? You can't fix stupid. You just can't. I've tried. Trust me, as governor, I've tried many times. What we need to do is focus on the right message for the vast majority of the state. It's a small vocal minority, very, very small, that's in this little corner with this on both sides of the aisle, frankly. It's really bizarre. But the 95% of the individuals out there, they get it. They want to be safe. They want to wear their mask, keep social distancing, make sure the vaccine comes out, be safe for themselves. They understand. I think people really do understand the responsibility that we all have, not for ourselves, but I always say for our coworkers and our families and our communities. You don't know what the situation is for the people you're coming in contact with. And if you are asymptomatic, there's people that still say that you can't pass this asymptomatically and all that. It's been so proven 100,000 times over and with really, really tough results. So please be safe. We want folks to know the vaccine's here. It doesn't mean this is over by any means. We still have months and months to go before we really get the vaccine, into society. As you said, 100 million individuals will likely get the vaccine in the next 2 or 3 months. That's great, but that still isn't the end of the game. So we still have a ways to go here, and I think if we're just disciplined, we may all make those personal sacrifices. There's no reason we can't get through this, safely and healthy, and minimize, the risk of those high-risk individuals that are so vulnerable.
Hey, Governor, real quick, there was an executive order on Friday, which did cause a little confusion, not just with me, because I know, I've taken a lot of shots to the head in my wrestling days, but with other people as well, suspending opt-out from the state vaccination registry and reporting of vaccination status to the CDC. Folks can't opt out of reporting their status because of religious exemptions or whatnot, but just with the COVID-19 vaccine. Could you kind of clear up what that means as far as that executive order goes, because I'm sure there's some people that are kind of like losing their minds about that.
Sure. So we have a state vaccine registry that is separate. It's really that exists, and there are exemptions there, and those exemptions still hold. There is a second registry just for COVID-19 because you need two shots. We need to know who got the first shot and when you're due for your second shot. It's more of a scheduling mechanism than anything, just to make sure that people aren't coming in for a second shot. You'd be amazed that people they forget, they weren't sure when they came in, they lost their card. I think I came in last month. I think I already got that second shot. No. You gotta follow through on the process. So what we've done is created a second registry with COVID-19. When you get the vaccine, the first shot, you have to go in because we have to be able to come back and say, hey, it's been 21 days. You got to go get your second shot now, and Dr. So-and-so is awaiting, your next visit, so that you follow through, because otherwise it gets wasted. The vaccine will get wasted if you don't get that second shot. So that's all it is. And then after the pandemic's done, that information can be delivered. deleted, can be thrown away. We're just keeping it on a temporary basis. You know, one thing we've really tried to do, and all these people that say you're creating laws, you know, from the governor's office, and you know your executive orders shouldn't be upheld, and all of this kind of nonsense. This is all temporary. It's all built around a state of emergency that is a temporary thing. We got a few more months to go, whether it's this new vaccine registry for the COVID-19 vaccine or the other emergency orders. It's all temporary stuff, and so the main vaccine registry doesn't get touched. This one is just different because it's a two-shot process.
I want to ask you about the nursing homes, long-term care facilities, and the New Hampshire Veterans Home. What's taken place, obviously, is tragic, and you know there's optimal scenarios which are very, very expensive, but one of which the federal government, if they had prioritized it, in my view, could have taken place and could have kept people safe. And I'm curious as to when you look at what's taken place in the long-term care facilities, which we knew was going to be the front lines of COVID-19 from the very beginning and the very first cases when they hit Washington State and the nursing home out there. What do you look at, and do you see what has taken place as being something that was not preventable? Do you think that there were enough resources expended on the state and the federal government part in order to try to stop these tragedies from taking place? Your thoughts.
Well, you know, when it comes to resources, I think both the federal government and the state, we've known very early on, back in March, that long-term care was far and away the most vulnerable area. We knew that before we even really had COVID here, because just what you pointed out, those very, very dangerous situations you saw out on the West Coast that happened first. So we've always known long-term care facilities, the attack rate of the virus is so aggressive, so much more aggressive than the flu or something like that. It's literally 10 to 20 times more aggressive, that once it got into a facility, it could go like wildfire. We also knew that asymptomatic spread was real. So you could have a nurse that just contracts it at a grocery store, or their kid goes to school and gets it, or whatever it might be. They don't even know it. They bring it in. And because of the very hands-on aspects of nursing in those facilities, it really goes like wildfire. So I'm sure there are instances that could have been minimized, but I got to be honest, long-term care facilities all across this country are always just so, so vulnerable unless you literally lock them down. You don't allow visitation. You make all the nurses just stay in their own living facilities and not go home and interact with their family and the general public at all. And we tried some of that early on, but at some point it becomes not very practical because people need to visit. I mean, there's a health benefit as well as to having loved ones be able to come in a safe way and visit, or to making sure that the nurses don't get burnt out, because eventually if the nurses can't go home, they're going to say, I'm going to go work somewhere else, mm-hmm. right? So you have to provide a life balance for them as well. And when the second surge came, we knew that long-term care facilities were going to be very vulnerable. That's why we maintained constant contact with them. Whatever PPE they ever needed, they got. Whatever training they needed, they got. When they needed additional staffing at the state VA home, we called the federal government immediately. We got some additional staffing up there. So it was never about money. We have all the money. It was never even about PPE. Whenever they needed PPE, they got PPE. There's a lot of false stories out there of they couldn't get this and they couldn't get that. We maintain daily contact, and especially with the state VA home, Commandant Lebrecht, I've been very public about this, has done a phenomenal job. Her staff is doing a phenomenal job. And these folks that are playing politics with this, that want to try to tear them down and, oh, well, you didn't act fast enough and all this, that's political nonsense. And we, you know, we are talking to them literally, and not just now, we have been, like literally every single day. What do you need? How's it going? How are your staffing? Where's your crunch? What are your crunch points? How's visitation going? You know, what's working? What isn't? All of that stuff. So, I don't want to get into preventable or not preventable, because that's a bit unknown, other than to say I think we took a lot of precautions up front. I think of ultimately, you know, nurses or even a visitation or something, it just takes one case getting into these facilities to run like wildfire. I think they've done a good job isolating it in what they call their neighborhoods, a couple of their wings within the VA. It's not throughout the entire facility. They were able to isolate it because they cohort their staff and whatnot. But it has had really, really tough effects. And it isn't just the state VA home. There are 25 other facilities that have outbreaks in them right now with family and loved ones just here in New Hampshire, never mind literally the 1,000 long-term care facilities across the country that have outbreaks in them now. So it's a real sore point, which is why today is so important, the vaccine. That's exactly where it's going to go first. It's going to go to long-term care and hospitals and high-risk nurses and staff and all of that, and that will really help start minimizing fatality rate that you've seen across this country.
Governor, appreciate your time.
Thank you, sir. Be good.
That is New Hampshire Governor Chris Sununu joining us here on New Hampshire Today. I am Chris Reinl of Justin McIsaac.
That is Governor Sununu joining me on New Hampshire Today. This is CRNH on KXL. This hour of the program brought to you by New England College as well as Fox Ace Hardware. And this segment of the show brought to you by Rath Young & Pignatelli and RathLaw.com.